Before I start this episode, I just want to warn you that I had a really hard week leading up to recording this. I was way behind and I was kind of under the weather and I was really exhausted. So during this episode, it will look like I'm really tired and I'm on the verge of falling asleep, and that's because I really am. As a matter of fact, I edited out a few times where I actually did fall asleep. Also, I normally record really early in the mornings when everybody's still asleep. This episode I had to record in the afternoons, and my young son came out to hang out with me. He didn't make a whole lot of noise, but he did have his tablet with him. I could barely hear the tablet, but apparently the microphone picked it up pretty good. So if you hear some talking in the background, that's his tablet, and I do apologize for the distraction. Anyway, I hope it's still a good episode, and I hope you enjoy it. And away we go. In this episode, we're going to talk about cheese and wine. But this isn't any kind of cheese, it's Ashe County cheese. And it isn't just any wine. North Carolina has come a long way in the wine making business, but today we're actually talking about cheer wine. Welcome to the NC Everything Podcast, a weekly show where I talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. I'm your host, Curtis, and I'm actually running really behind. It's been a rough couple of weeks. I don't know if you can hear through the audio, but I've had a cold now for the past 3 or 4 days. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that I'm not in my normal spot. I'm actually sitting on my front porch in an old recliner that we have out here. And that's because I feel like crap. And I am running behind. You see, I've been trying to stay a couple weeks ahead, but this time of year, I'm planting my garden, I got a whole lot going on, and I just got real busy and real lazy, and time just kind of got away from me. And so what you're watching right now, I'm recording on Wednesday, and I have to get this ready to go by Saturday. And that's why you can see that I'm not recording early in the morning like I normally do either. I actually just got off work. I don't have any more early mornings before this episode goes out. But even though I'm kind of rushing and I feel like crap, I'm going to try to give you a good episode. Another thing I want to say is I'm going to try to eventually get where I don't have to edit as much. So you're going to get a little more raw material, because the past few episodes, I spent a lot of spare time editing and trying to get everything just right. The problem is I don't have a lot of spare time. And I don't want to shut the podcast down, but I am losing a lot of time with my kids and stuff I need to be doing. And nobody said I had a bad podcast so far, so I'm going to roll the dice and see how it goes. I'm going to try to limit that editing down to maybe an hour or so. And I guess I'll be going all out, because the notes I have today, I actually have not really looked through them. So I don't know how this is going to go, but like I said, I'm going to give it my best shot. Now, before we get into the content, I do want to say, if you're returning for episode, I think, 88, maybe, I'm glad you're back here with us. And if this is your first episode, well, I'm glad you're here. Now, while you're listening or watching the NC Everything podcast, if you like the show, I wish you'd consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing, because that really helps the show. And to be a little more specific, subscribing really just lets me know how many people actually listen or watch the show. And the rating and review, and I know you can't do that across all platforms, but any ratings and reviews I get are going to make it easier for other people to find the show. But anyway, I don't have a whole lot of time. I got to get my kids to soccer practice in a couple hours, so let's go ahead and get into the content. Now, this is going to be one of those dual episodes that I do. I said we're going to be talking about cheese and cheer wine, and I'm going to start it off with cheese. Now, cheese is definitely one of my guilty pleasures, kind of like ice cream and pizza. You know, I can't hardly say no to it. It ain't uncommon for me to walk past the refrigerator and grab a piece of sliced cheese, or me and my wife will go to the grocery store, and we'll literally buy a little block of sample cheese and eat it on the way home, or I'll eat it on the way home. She doesn't eat quite as much cheese as I do. But let me start by giving you some of the history of cheese. Now, the people know that cheese making goes back about 4,000 years, and they know this because of records that have been passed down through the generations. But the funny thing is, they don't know who made the first cheese. And nobody knows. I guess nobody will ever know. And once you hear how cheese is made, it's actually kind of a complicated process. So it's weird to think that somebody stumbled into cheese. But that's pretty much what happened. The legend is that an Arabian merchant had a pouch that was made out of a sheep's stomach. Well, he was going to journey across the desert, so he pours some milk into this sheep's stomach, you know, so he can have something to drink along the way. Well, the lighting of the stomach, mixed with the heat of the desert, caused the milk to separate into curds and whey. Well, that night when he stopped, he drank the whey, and, you know, that took care of the thirsty part, but inside there were these little tiny balls of stuff, the curds. Well, he didn't know what to do with it, so he decided to eat one, and turns out it was really, really good. And so, if you believe that, that was the night that cheese was born. But again, that's kind of a legend, a myth, maybe. But one thing that is a fact is cheese was most likely made by accident, but somebody at some point in history had to take one of those curds and decide to eat it. And most of the food we have like that, you know, somebody had to be the first one to eat it. And I don't know, I'm glad I never had to be in that situation. But somewhere in Asia, cheese was invented. And from Asia, cheese made its way over to Europe. And that was probably thanks to the Roman Empire. It was humongous, and so if cheese was being passed around the Roman Empire, eventually it's going to come to Europe, and eventually England. Well, from England, cheese made its way to America in 1620 when the Pilgrims came over. And so the Pilgrims, they set up shop over here, but cheese making didn't really blow up. I mean, everybody loved cheese, but if you wanted cheese, you had to go to a local farm to get it. It wasn't sold in stores everywhere or nothing like that. But then, in 1851, a guy named Jesse Williams built the very first cheese factory in the United States, and he built that in Oneida County, New York. Now, I couldn't really find what kind of cheese they were making in New York around this time, but after this cheese factory opened, cheese making really started spreading across the United States. But one place that's really known for its cheese is Wisconsin. And Wisconsin comes back in this podcast, so keep your ears out. But in 1845, a bunch of Swiss immigrants settled in Greene County, Wisconsin. And immediately, they started making Swiss cheese from their homeland. In 1868, they opened up their first plant, and it was a Limburger cheese plant. And so it was around this time and after this time that cheese factories really started popping up all over the place. By the turn of the century, we were making over 300 million pounds of cheese per year. By the 1970s, we were making 2 billion pounds of cheese per year. And today, over a third of the milk produced in the United States goes into cheese. Now, I know that was a pretty brief history, and I didn't focus on any one kind of cheese, and there's tons of different kinds of cheeses out there. But I wanted to go ahead and get through that so I can focus on Ashe County cheese. After all, this is the NC Everything Podcast. I bet if you look, though, there's probably a podcast out there all about cheese. But anyway, Ashe County cheese. And if you're not from North Carolina, I'm saying ash, like the ash tree or wood ashes. I'm not saying Ashe County. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about Ashe County cheese is because Ashe County is the largest cheese manufacturer in North Carolina. And somewhere in my notes, it had said that Ashe County was the only cheese maker in North Carolina, but I know that's not true, so I don't know if that was an old article. There's actually a lot of local cheese makers around the state now. But the thing about Ashe County is they still make it from cow's milk, and I think they may do some goat's milk too, but a lot of local cheesemakers are only doing goat's milk. Ashe County cheese is one of the few in the state that still use mostly cow's milk. And Ashe County cheese is also the oldest cheese manufacturer in North Carolina. So the story starts in 1930. The Kraft Company, like Kraft Macaroni and Cheese, well, they consolidated a bunch of their smaller plants into one main plant. And the main reason they done this was this plant was going to be a lot bigger, and with this bigger facility, they could distribute their cheese all around the country. And so Kraft, they ran this plant from 1930 to 1975. And then in 1975, it was sold to Chelsea Hazelwood, and she had been a manager at the craft plant for years. And I don't think she kept it very long. The craft plant, it would get sold and bought several times over the years. But it was bought for the last time in 1994. Now, remember I said, you know, Wisconsin was a huge place for cheese? I feel like I'm saying Wisconsin weird. Anyway, everybody knows Wisconsin is known for their cheese. Well, in 1994, Mike Everhart and Tom Tuttleson, who were two cheesemakers from Wisconsin, well, they bought this former craft plant. Well, Everhart, he finally moves down to Ashe County so he can manage the plant. And Tuttleson, he never actually left Wisconsin. He actually still lives there today. So he manages, or he did manage, from a distance. But anyway, they started the Ashe County Cheese Company. And today, the Ashe County Cheese Company makes about 35,000 pounds of cheese every single week. Now, the cheese they make at Ashe County Cheese is mostly cheddar and like a Monterey Jack cheese. And they make all their cheese with milk that's imported from within 100 miles of the plant. Now, the types of cheeses you can buy from Ashe County are the hoop cheeses, which are the ones that are in the big cheese wheel. And you can also buy the bricks of cheese. And if you go to the factory, you can go in and watch them make the cheese. You might be wondering, where do you buy this cheese at? Well, there's a store right across the road. You see, in 2010, Mike Everhart sold his shares of the factory to his son, Luke Everhart, and his son-in-law, Josh Williams. So Luke and Josh, they co-own the factory with Tom Tuttleson. Well, what Mike did was he found a spot right across the road from the factory, and he opened the factory store. So even though it's the factory store, the factory and the store are both independently owned. Or I guess I should say they're separate entities. So after you tour the factory, you walk across the road into the store, and you can buy all the cheese in there, but they also sell all kinds of meats and souvenirs, t-shirts. It's kind of like a general store. And it's a really cool place to walk around, and it's a cool place to spend a whole lot of money. I've been up there one time, and I think we walked out of there with like $100 worth of stuff. And me and my wife, literally, we were on a road trip, and we literally drove away from the cheese factory making ham sandwiches with cheese in the car while we were riding away from there. And the funny thing is, years ago, we were going to take a road trip, me and my wife, and we were trying to figure out where to go. And she said, hey, there's a cheese factory in West Jefferson. And I said, oh, yeah, we should go to the cheese factory. That sounds awesome. Because me and my wife are both kind of geeks, you know. Cheese factory does sound awesome. For whatever reason, we changed our mind and went somewhere else. And years went by, and it became kind of a joke between us that, hey, we've never been to that cheese factory. And finally, I think it was 2 years ago, I said, damn it, let's go to the cheese factory. And so we went, and it was really fun. And we ate a whole lot of cheese, and bread, and salami, and ham. And I think we bought several packs of crackers from there, too. So a lot of money, a lot of calories, but it was some good eating. And maybe a cheese factory doesn't seem like a big deal to most people. But keep in mind, I'm a cheese fiend. I could eat my weight in cheese. Not everybody is like that. Second, Ashe County cheese is some of the best cheese I've ever had in my life. And if you want to try it, don't think you got to go up to the plant. I think you can actually order it offline. Although riding up to West Jefferson would be a whole lot funner. Now, before I wrap up the cheese section, I want to tell you about the process of making the cheese. And like I said, you can go up and look in the factory. I think I said factory tour, but really you walk in and you can kind of see the production from a big window. You don't actually get to tour around. When you go to visit the factory, you'll see these giant holding tanks right outside the factory, and they're actually painted like Holstein cows. So when the milk gets delivered, that's where it goes. From here, the milk gets pasteurized, then it gets cooled and poured into these 20,000 pound vats. Well, inside these vats, they pour in this culture to help the milk coagulate. And that just kind of speeds up the cheese making part. Once the milk is thick enough, they add rennet. That's R-E-N-N-E-T. And that's an enzyme that kicks off the cheese making process. And once the rennet is in there, the milk will start separating into curds and whey. And these curds are literally just small little blobs of cheese. Well, then this stainless steel cutter chops all the curds up into smaller pieces. Then the vat is heated up to 101 degrees. Once it reaches this temperature, they push all these curds away. I guess most of them are floating. They push all these curds over to one side and they drain all that liquid out of it. Then all the curds are kind of mushed together in this one big mass. Then for the next hour, they're rotating this cheese around and around and around. And this is called cheddaring. And the cheddaring is what gives the cheese its texture. After this big cheese mass is run through a milling machine, and it chops the curds back down into little bite-sized pieces. Then these curds are salted, and they're put into these containers for pressing. And the containers are either for a 22-pound wheel of cheese or a 40-pound block of cheese. Once they're in these cheese molds, hydraulic pressure comes down, and it presses the cheese for 3 hours. And so when you get done, you got a 22-pound wheel of cheese, or you got a 40-pound block of cheese. It says that the blocks are covered in clear plastic. The wheels, they're dipped in clear wax and then dipped into red wax. And then all this cheese goes in a 40-degree cooler for aging. And even the aging is pretty specific. If you like mild cheese, you want to age it from 30 days to 3 months. A medium flavor is 4 to 6 months. If you like sharp cheese, you got to wait 8 months to a year. And if you like super sharp cheddar cheese, you have to wait 2 to 2.5 years. Well, you don't have to wait. You can pick it up at the store right across the way. But that's how long it takes. And that's Ash County cheese. I would have loved to have went into a whole lot more detail, but there wasn't as much information on it as I was hoping. But the best advice I can give you is to ride up to West Jefferson and try this stuff out for yourself, and you can learn all about it. Now let's move on to Cheerwine. But first, the origin of soda. Now I say the origin of soda, but everybody knows, depending on what part of the country you're in, it might be soda, soda pop, Coke, or cola. But it doesn't really matter what you call it. The history goes all the way back to mineral water that was found in natural springs. You see, for thousands of years, they've felt like if you bathe in natural springs or soak in them or even drink natural spring water, that it has healing powers. It's good for you. And it probably is. I mean, it has a lot of natural minerals in it, but also this spring water bubbles up. Well, over the years, scientists have figured out that the bubbles in these natural springs comes from carbon dioxide in the water. Well, it wasn't too long before people started thinking, how can we make this carbonated water artificially, you know, without going to the natural spring? Well, an English doctor named Dr. Joseph Priestley figured that out in 1767 when he made the very first drinkable man-made glass of carbonated water. Well, then, in 1870, a chemist from Sweden named Torbern Bergman, he invented a machine that can make carbonated water in large quantities. But I don't know if it wasn't very efficient or what the deal was, but carbonated water really didn't hit it big until 1832. And that's when a guy named John Matthews, he invented another machine that made large quantities of carbonated water. Now, one thing I do know that's different with this guy Matthews, the machine he made that could make the carbonated water, he didn't just sell carbonated water, he sold the machine itself. And like I said, they felt like mineral water or carbonated water was good for you, so it was pharmacies that were selling these drinks, these mineral drinks. Well, the pharmacists, they started getting pretty creative, and they started adding flavors to the carbonated water. Because the carbonated water itself just tasted like water. It didn't really have a taste. So it says they would add stuff like dandelion, sarsaparilla, and fruit extracts to the water. And they would open up soda fountains in the pharmacy so you could just walk over and get this mineral water. But the thing was, times were changing. People wanted to go buy their water, or their flavored water now, and take it home with them. They didn't want to just sit at the pharmacy and drink it. So then, the bottling of this water became a big thing. And the only problem with bottling up a carbonated drink is the bubbles are still coming. You know, it has a tendency to try to explode. Well, a guy named William Painter, he fixed this problem in 1892 when he invented the Crown Cork Bottle Seal. And I tried to find a picture of the Crown Cork Bottle Seal. I really couldn't, but this was the first time they were able to bottle up carbonated water without the bottle exploding. Now that sounds good and everything, but it wasn't very efficient because they were still blowing the glass by hand. But in 1899, the very first patent for a glass blowing machine was issued. And from here, the bottling of sodas really blew up. It said that bottle production at that time went from 1,500 bottles a day to 57,000 bottles per day. Then in the 1920s, vending machines became a thing, which sounds funny now, but back then you could walk up, hit a button, and get a cold bottle drink right there at your fingertips. And then the inventors were coming out of the woodwork with their own types of soda. Dr. Pepper was invented by Charles Allerton in 1855 in Waco, Texas. Coca-Cola was invented by John Pemberton in 1892 in Atlanta, Georgia. Pepsi, as you probably know by now, was invented in New Bern, North Carolina by Caleb Bradham in 1893. And Mountain Dew was invented in 1940 by Barney and Allie Hartman in Knoxville, Tennessee. But the soda I want to tell you about is Cheerwine. But before I get into that, if you're watching from YouTube, then you see that there's been an outfit change. In the time it took me to change from that blue shirt into this red shirt, well, I fell asleep while I was podcasting. I woke up a couple hours later. I took my kids to soccer practice, came home, went to sleep, went to work, worked all day, and now I'm home again, straight into podcasting, right after work, just like yesterday, and hopefully I can stay awake long enough to finish it this time. On a positive note, the cold that I had, or I still have it, but the cold that I talked about having at the beginning of this episode is starting to diminish a little bit. I feel a little bit better today, so that's good. But I still feel kind of crappy, and I'm still pretty tired. But anyway, let's talk about Cheerwine. Now, there were three things that were going on that brought Cheerwine into existence for us. One, soda was booming all around the country, which I kind of just ran through. Two, of all the flavors of soda, cherry was in pretty high demand around this time. And three, World War I was going on. And if you don't know, during World War I, they were rationing everything. But one of those things that they were rationing was sugar. So keep those things in mind as I go through this. The year is 1913. There's a company out of Kentucky called the Mint Cola Bottling Company. Well, there's a guy named L.D. Peeler, and he was an investor. Well, L.D. Peeler and a handful of other investors, they wanted to break into this soda business. They could see that it was doing good for itself. So they buy stock in the Mint Cola Bottling Company. And then Peeler starts his own branch of the Mint Cola Bottling Company in Salisbury, North Carolina. Unfortunately, 4 years later in 1917, the Mint Cola Bottling Company goes bankrupt. But L.D. Peeler, he didn't let this get him down. After the Mint Cola Bottling Company went bankrupt, well, he bought his Salisbury location from the company, and he renamed it the Carolina Beverage Corporation. So it seems like it's working out for him, you know, now he owns his own business. But like I said, there was a sugar shortage, so he had to find a way to make soda using less sugar. And remember, the sugar was pretty much just in the flavoring. Without the flavoring, it was just carbonated water. It didn't really have a lot of taste. So when I say he was trying to make soda with less sugar, he was looking for a flavoring with less sugar. And he tried a bunch of different things, but none of it really seemed to work. Well, eventually, he ran into a salesman who was traveling around, and this guy probably sold a bunch of stuff, but one thing he was selling was this wild cherry soda flavoring. So Peeler, he buys this wild cherry flavoring from the guy, and he tries it out in his sodas, and he fell in love with it. Right away, he knew he had something special. But before he could start selling this cherry-flavored soda, he had to come up with a name for it. Eventually, he picked Cheerwine. Now, a lot of people, including myself, think the name Cheerwine comes from the cherry flavoring. But actually, he claims that the cheer comes from the cheery disposition that the drink gives you when you drink it. And the wine part comes from the wine color that the drink takes on once you add the mix. Now, I was actually going to stop at the store on the way home from work and get another cheer wine. I figured since I'm talking about it, you know, I'd have it here. But here's the thing. And I just want to go ahead and say this. Y'all can turn the podcast off and never listen to me again. I understand. I'm actually not a fan of Cheerwine. Now, I don't want any of you to take that personally. It's not about Cheerwine. I don't like cherry-flavored stuff. I like cherries. I like actual cherries in stuff, like black cherry ice cream is one of my favorites. But I don't like cherry-flavored stuff. And so I might have had two Cheerwines my entire life. But if that makes you mad, keep in mind I was willing to go to the store and get one and drink a Cheerwine while I'm doing the rest of this episode just for you guys. I didn't do it because I forgot. So I ought to get a few points for that, at least. But anyway, in 1917, Cheerwine was born. Now, he started making Cheerwine in 1917, but it wouldn't become trademarked until 1926. And do you want to know the Cheerwine formula? Yeah, me too. Everybody does. It is a very well-kept secret. In fact, I saw a documentary, I think it was a... It was some program on YouTube a couple years ago, and one of their segments was about Cheerwine. Apparently, the Peeler descendants still own the Cheerwine company. And according to this documentary on Cheerwine, the great-grandson runs the company today, and his grandchildren help him. And the great-grandson, he knows the recipe for Cheerwine, but his kids and his grandkids, they don't know it. So they even keep that recipe secret from themselves. But the great-grandson said that he's going to pass that recipe on to at least one family member before he dies. And as a matter of fact, he may have already done that. Alright, so they're making Cheerwine, they're bottling Cheerwine up. But they still got to distribute it. And when they first started making Cheerwine, they were using horse and carriage and even train to get the Cheerwine around. But the Cheerwine company bought their first delivery truck in the 1920s. Now, one thing I want to add here was the Carolina Beverage Company that Peeler... You know, started once he bought the building. They weren't just making Cheerwine; they were making all kinds of sodas. But once it became obvious that Cheerwine was a mega hit and everybody loved it, well, he quit making all the other sodas and he dedicated the whole place just to making Cheerwine. And since all he was making was Cheerwine, in 1924, he changed the name of the company to the Piedmont Cheerwine Bottling Company. But at this time, Cheerwine was still only available in western North Carolina. Well, L.D. Peeler, he dies in 1931, and his son Clifford takes over from there. And that was a bad year for anybody to start a business or take over a business. That's because of the Great Depression. So Clifford really spent the next few years just trying to keep the Cheerwine company from going bankrupt. Fast forward 20 years, and now we're in the 1950s. And the first president ever to drink a soda drank Cheerwine. And this president was Dwight Eisenhower. And the rumor is that Eisenhower took one sip of Cheerwine and said, Ike likes. Which, I hope that's only a rumor. I hope a president of the United States didn't actually say Ike likes. Because, I don't know, it's just kind of lame. Well, then the 1960s rolls around. In 1967, Cheerwine moves to its current location. Also during the 1960s, the first can of Cheerwine was produced. At the beginning of the 1970s, Diet Cheerwine was launched. And also later on in the 1970s, plastic 2-liter bottles came out. In 2002, Food Lion introduced Cheerwine ice cream. Which again, I don't like Cheerwine, so I don't know how I feel about the ice cream, but it at least sounds cool. And in 2003, the Cheerwine company made a deal with a Norwegian bottling company. And for the first time, Cheerwine was available overseas. Now, remember how I said the Cheerwine ice cream sounded cool? Well, in 2010, Cheerwine got into business with Krispy Kreme. And Krispy Kreme and Cheerwine make the first ever Cheerwine-flavored donut. In 2014, they tried out some other new flavors, including Cheerwine Holiday Punch, Cheerwine Squeeze, and Cheerwine Cream with a K, which I guess is the Cheerwine-flavored cream from the Krispy Kreme donut. And in 2015, Cheerwine became an official part of a Southern handshake. And what I mean by that is that for a century, a lot of barbecue restaurants were serving Cheerwine with their barbecue. And it became so natural to have a Cheerwine with your barbecue that Cheerwine barbecue pair became known as a Southern handshake. And today, the Peeler family, like I said, still owns the Cheerwine company. And in some places, but mostly Foodline, you can still buy Cheerwine flavored ice cream, sherbet, cream bars, and there's a Cheerwine flavored cake. And the last thing I'm going to say about Cheerwine is that some people mix it with Captain Morgan, which is a rum, and they call it Captain Cheerwine. It's also known as the Whining Pirate. And that's all I have for this episode. I actually was dozing off again. I hate being this tired. I hate feeling like this. But I hope you like this episode. If this is your first episode, don't think that my fatigue is an example of my interest in Cheerwine or cheese. I don't like Cheerwine that much, but I absolutely love cheese. So go check out an episode where I'm feeling pretty good and base your opinion on that. But I do hope this episode wasn't too much of a drab for you. I hope you enjoyed listening more than I enjoyed sitting out here trying to stay awake and record it for you. But hopefully the next episode will be a whole lot better. I'll feel a whole lot better, have a little more energy, and I might pick a different spot in the yard to record at. Not my normal spot, and probably not in this chair. I think this recliner is cursed. Every time I sit in it, I fall asleep, it seems like. Anyway, let's see. I got to wrap up. So, like I said at the beginning, if you like this episode, subscribe, rate, and review, because that really helps the show, and it helps my weak ego. And you can also join the NC Everything Podcast Facebook group. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Or you can just search the NC Everything Podcast on Facebook. And if you're listening but you want to watch on YouTube, there's a link for my YouTube channel in the show notes. And if you have an idea for an episode or you just want to reach out and say hello, there'll be a link to contact me in the show notes too. Just recently, a really nice lady named Emily reached out to me, and she told me something I never knew. There's a famous Civil War spy named Rose Greenhow, and I found out she's buried right here in North Carolina. Yep, down there in Wilmington. And I've read about Rose Greenhow a few times over the years. Had no idea she was buried here. So Miss Greenhow's probably going to end up on the show eventually. But as you can see, I encourage you to reach out and say hello and tell me stuff I didn't know before, suggest episodes, and just give me some feedback. And if you're just watching on YouTube and you're interested in my entire back stock, you can click the link below to go to the official NC Everything Podcast website. And right on the home screen, you can listen to episode 1 through 70-something or another. I think I was in the 70s when I started putting it on YouTube. But you can go back and listen all the way to episode 1. But anyway, that's all I have for you today. Thank you for hanging in there. I hope you guys have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you next time.
The music in this episode comes from ArchesAudio.com and FreePD.com.